A long-awaited report shows that Utah could save millions of dollars by expanding Medicaid. The Boy Scouts of America vote to include gay youth, and Latter-day Saints remember the life of Francis Monson. You're listening to the KUER News Pod for Friday, May 24th. I'm Brian Grimmett. Utah could save millions of dollars and provide health insurance to about 123,000 people if the state expands Medicaid. That was the conclusion of an independent cost-benefit analysis commissioned by the state and released Thursday to the governor's Medicaid expansion workgroup. KUER's Andrea Smartin has more.
The report from the nonpartisan public consulting group based in Boston examines the impact of Utah's options: no expansion, full expansion, or partial expansion of Medicaid. Each option requires some investment by the state. Full expansion would provide coverage to all individuals with incomes up to 138% of the poverty level. The report finds that initial cost to the state would be offset by tax revenue and savings to aid programs, with total savings estimated at $131 million. Lincoln Nehring, senior health policy analyst at Voices for Utah Children, says this bolsters the case that Medicaid expansion is affordable for the state.
What I hope this does is allows us to move forward and understand that we can use those Medicaid dollars to form a Utah solution to do this. But there's no excuse not to do the Medicaid expansion. And the question now should be, well, how do we do the expansion? And there are a lot of different ways we can do that.
The total cost would increase for the state over time, however. That's in part why Utah's Republican-controlled legislature has opposed a Medicaid expansion. Governor Gary Herbert's office has emphasized that this report is only one part of the overall review and analysis before he makes his decision expected this fall. The governor's Medicaid expansion workgroup has been tasked with exploring the options and sharing its findings with Herbert. At the workgroup's meeting, the public was given the opportunity to give testimony. Von Davis read a letter from the Consumer Advisory Board for 4th Street Clinic, a homeless health organization.
As you work together on this issue, we ask that you remember our lives. We aren't asking for anything special. We just want to be able to see a doctor when we are sick, and our only path is with Medicaid.
The report did not quantify the benefits or savings from improved health as a result of more citizens being insured. Andrea Smartin, KUER News.
The Boy Scouts of America voted yesterday to change the policy on including gay youth in the organization. At its meeting in Grapevine, Texas, 61% of the Scouts delegates voted to support the change, which still bars gay adults from becoming scout leaders. Ken Krogh is on the board of the Utah National Parks Council in Provo, the largest of the five councils that serve Boy Scouts in the state. Its 17 delegates decided before the meeting they would vote yes on the change in policy. Krogh listened to a couple of hours of what he said was a well-reasoned and calm debate last night before he got up to speak himself.
I felt strong to really applaud the process, the civility that went on. I noted that the issues were complex, and I felt strong that, you know, the Utah National Parks Council had come down in support of our primary charter partner, which is the LDS Church.
The church issued a statement last month saying the change in policy constructively addresses the issues confronting scouting. Delegates from the Great Salt Lake Council were free to vote their conscience on the issue. The vote was conducted using a secret ballot. The Scouts' annual meeting in Texas doesn't end with the vote on this policy change. Krogh says there are many more issues to discuss, lots of training opportunities for the 1,400 delegates from across the country. Hundreds of mourners gathered at the LDS Tabernacle on Temple Square yesterday to remember Frances Monson, the wife of President Thomas Monson of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And Dib says her mother used her quiet manner to show her deep conviction and the strength of her faith.
As a family, we are so grateful to Frances Monson for her legacy, a legacy of humility, service, faithfulness, and love.
And Dieter Uchtdorf of the church's first presidency said the love that President and Sister Monson had for each other was enjoyed and shared with the faithful across great distances.
President Monson once said of his wife, "I could not have asked for a more loyal, loving, and understanding companion." Whenever he spoke of the miraculous strength and mighty power of wives and mothers, I knew he was thinking of his sweet eternal companion, Frances.
Sister Monson passed away a week ago at the age of 85. She was laid to rest yesterday at the Salt Lake City Cemetery.
The man accused of murdering an Ogden police officer and wounding five other officers was found dead in his jail cell this morning. The Deseret News says Matthew Stewart's family posted a statement on his Facebook page announcing his death, but didn't say how he died. Stewart was charged with aggravated murder in the death of Officer Jared Frankham, who died in a shootout at Stewart's home when the Weber Morgan Narcotics Strike Force went there to serve a search warrant in January of 2012. He was also facing seven counts of attempted aggravated murder. Attorneys for a man who was shot and killed by a police officer last fall have filed a lawsuit against the Box Elder County Sheriff's Department for what they claim to be unlawful and unconstitutional use of deadly force. KUER's Whitney Evans reports.
On the night of October 26th, an intoxicated, unarmed 52-year-old Troy Birkinshaw took Box Elder County Sheriff's Deputy Austin Bocut on a car chase through the streets of Corinne, Utah, after he'd been cited for urinating on the side of the road. The chase ended as Birkinshaw maneuvered his vehicle out of a dead-end road and into Deputy Bocut, who had exited his own vehicle. Bocut fired two shots at Birkinshaw through his windshield.
He has a person who's under the influence of alcohol, who isn't fully conversant, who's driving at low speeds.
Attorney Jim McConkie says it was a death that could have been prevented. His firm is representing Birkinshaw's estate, hoping to end the use of excessive force by police officers.
He has time to think about how they're going to bring this chase to a safe conclusion, de-escalate the situation. He's been trained to do those kinds of things, and yet his choice is to use deadly force.
McConkie says the only way to justify the shooting is if Birkinshaw was trying to run the officer down and the officer couldn't get away.
But in this situation, the officer places himself in front of the vehicle, is walking backwards, and Mr. Birkinshaw is not trying to run him over.
Box Elder County Sheriff Lynn Yates told KUBR he did not want to comment because he had not yet seen the lawsuit documents. Whitney Evans, KUBR News.
Kennecott Utah Copper announced yesterday it will lay off about 100 salaried employees. The company is trying to manage the impact of a huge landslide that will reduce its production by about 50% this year. The company says the laid-off workers will receive severance and employee assistance. The Natural History Museum of Utah is opening a new exhibit that examines how some of the Earth's most dangerous natural disasters happen. Here at one of the several hands-on learning experiences at the new Nature Unleashed exhibit, fourth graders from Rose Creek Elementary School learn about what happens to buildings built on sandy soil during an earthquake. Lisa Thompson, the manager of public programs, says she hopes experiences like this one help people make an emotional connection with the powerful natural events that help shape the earth.
It's that personal connection that I think sparks people's learning, motivates them to want to learn more, and in this case we hope will also motivate them to want to take action in their own lives to be prepared for the disasters that will inevitably strike our community.
Along with the scientific explanations of tornadoes, hurricanes, volcanoes, earthquakes, and tsunamis, the new exhibit also shares the personal stories of people who have been affected by them. In fact, Museum Executive Director Sarah George says it's her favorite part.
Seeing how people have coped with tragedy since these natural disasters, understanding how they've moved on, and it is a testament to the resilience of human spirit.
The exhibit opens to the public on Saturday, May 25th. George says the museum will also be donating 25% of ticket revenue during the opening week to the American Red Cross to help out the victims of the Moore, Oklahoma tornado.
Well, the first stop for Dan Nayland's entertainment tour this Memorial Day weekend is the Utah Museum of Fine Arts.
The Bierstadt Warhol show, subtitled American Indians in the West, it's a pretty amazing swath of Native American imagery that they have on display there. It's over 100 pieces of art, everything from oil paintings to sculptures, drawings. And what's really cool about it to me as a non-art expert is that it goes from old sort of your classic imagery of the American Indian West all the way up to modern Native American artists themselves doing paintings of sort of modern life on the reservation. So you have this gigantic stretch of about 160 years of history in there covered by these artworks. And then you get to people like Andy Warhol and Roy Lichtenstein who are sort of taking those stereotypical American Indian images and playing with them. So you get into a lot of different styles of artwork to show different ways that Native Americans have been portrayed over the years. Really some visually arresting stuff, some amazing sculptures, some really vibrant colors. The show opened over the winter. This is the first chance we've had to sort of delve into it, and I've been more than once now to check it out. It runs actually until August 11th, but this is a perfect time to go and check in because I have a feeling once people see it once, they'll want to go back again.
To be followed by traditional Celtic punk.
There you go. That's one of the highlights of the week ahead. After you get through the Memorial Day weekend on Tuesday night, Dropkick Murphys are coming through town for the first time in quite a few years, actually. Boston sort of pop punk band, very traditional in some ways, and then you get the mosh pit going, right? So you get these loud and abrasive songs. These guys out of Boston, they're actually raising a lot of money for the victims of the Boston Marathon bombings right now, so you have a great chance to kind of contribute there. So that's a great thing on Tuesday night after the weekend. But before that, kind of tying in with our American Indian theme in a way, out at Antelope Island all weekend over Memorial Day, it's a cowboy poetry gathering called Cowboy Legends. Go out to Antelope Island. It's about $9. You can check out some great music, some great poetry. That's a great time. And this weekend is also the very end of the Mummies of the World at the Leonardo. So if you want to see some mummies, you better hurry.
Dan Nalen reports on entertainment for KUER and blogs at SLCene, that's SLCENE.com.
And that is your KUER News Pod for Friday, May 24th. For the latest news and updates from around the state, visit us online at KUER.org or follow us on Twitter at KUER News. Until next time, I'm Brian Grimmett.